Ms. Himes, this case was scheduled as the fourth case for argument. You should have been here before 9:30 in the morning.
That is correct, Your Honor.
Hearing at 11 o'clock is discourteous to the court, to your opposition, and is unprofessional.
And I apologize greatly, Your Honor.
It will never happen again in your career, I trust.
That is correct.
Please proceed.
Thank you. Good morning. May it please the court. When Mr. Bennis walked into his EEOC mediation, he had a job. When he walked out of the mediation, he was fired. We believe this case is about protecting the ADR process, especially EEOC mediation.
What about protecting the mediation process? Shouldn't there be a sanction for disrupting the separated mediation process, the very standard mediation device?
Well,
you have people barging in on each other's meeting rooms. And
well, it was a slight disruption, but
I asked you a different question. Shouldn't there be a sanction for violating the terms of a mediation?
No, and let me explain why briefly. There are no guidelines for the particular type of EEOC mediation.
No, look.
But
the guideline is the mediator decides, which is within his authority, that it's going to be a separated mediation. That's an extremely common device.
Correct.
Now, if there's no sanction for disrupting it by going into the other person's meeting room, then mediation is impaired. So the question is, should there be a sanction?
No, for two reasons. The first reason would be that it's our position that Mr. Bennis, although he used colorful language and perhaps was not as polite as he should have been.
I don't care about his language. I care about his violating the terms of mediation by barging in to the other side's meeting room.
Well, it was not a violation of any protocols used by the parties.
Of course it is. Look, if you have separated mediation, you don't barge into the other side's meeting room. Don't you understand that?
Other side's meeting room in negotiations?
I'm sorry?
Do you barge into the other side's meeting room in separated negotiations?
I do not, but Mr. Bennis...
Of course you don't.
Mr. Bennis is a layperson.
You would expect, I assume, professional discipline to follow if you did, would you not?
Perhaps not professional discipline, but I expect that the mediator would say something to me, and here that was not done.
And you might expect professional discipline if you barged in, insulted the other side, and stalked out. By the way, Ms. Himes, what do you think would happen if your client had walked into the other side's room, punched the lead negotiator in the jaw, and walked out? Could your client have been fired?
Certainly.
Look, trying to talk over the question isn't going to help you. Why would there be a legal difference between insulting somebody when you're not supposed to be there and punching somebody when you're not supposed to be there?
The difference is that the mediation agreement provides for sanctions.
Your answer has got to be in terms of the statute, because your argument to us is that as a matter of federal law, somebody cannot be discharged for misconduct during the mediation. Now, misconduct here was walking into the other side's room and insulting them.
Correct.
And you said as a matter of law there can be no response. So I'm asking you what happens if you walk into the other side's negotiating room and you punch them. And your answer was, well, yeah, then he could be fired. And I'm trying to figure out why, as a matter of federal law, those two situations are different.
Well, because we're talking about the difference between Title VII's participation clause, which has virtually no limits, versus Title VII's opposition clause. And what AB Data did here in their brief is analogize more toward the opposition clause of Title VII and bring in some of the standards under the National Labor Relations Act, which do not apply to participation cases. And in fact, we're looking in particular at the Hatmaker case.
I'm completely lost. I don't see that you're distinguishing the insult case from the punch case in terms of the argument made in your brief. Now, maybe there is one, but I'm not getting it.
Our position is that there should be no difference, but we are willing, if the court is interested in entertaining a violence exception.
There should be no difference? I'm sorry. Did I hear that right?
I obviously misspoke.
If you punch
under
him
the participation
in the
clause,
you still can't be fired because you're participating in.
Well,
is that your position?
No, this court and other courts who have dealt with the subject
Judge
have.
What is Judge Easterbrook's question?
No court has specifically ruled on this question under the participation clause.
Why don't you give your answer to Judge Easterbrook's question?
We believe it would be reasonable for this court to make an exception under the participation clause for violence or threats of violence as contemplated in Section 6 of the confidentiality agreement here at page 110 of the appendix.
Section 6 of the confidentiality agreement at page 110 of the appendix has nothing to do with the statute. You're relying on the statute, which says
correct.
Your argument in your brief is that as long as there is a mediation ongoing, nothing the employee does in the mediation can be the cause of firing. That's your legal argument.
Yes.
I then say, well, what happens if the something is not an insult, but a punch? And you say, oh, well, then he could be fired. And then in response to Judge Posner, you say, well, but they shouldn't be treated differently. And, of course, you can tell what my next question is going to be. My next question is, he walks into the mediation room, pulls out his gun, and shoots her dead. And your argument would be, according to your brief, he still can't be fired because this is still conduct during the mediation. And it's therefore immunized as a matter of federal law. I don't think you're taking that principle seriously, and I then want to figure out what is it in federal law that allows the person to be fired for punching or shooting the opposite mediator, but not for insulting the person?
There currently is no case that we have been able to locate that deals with the question that you're asking. And we understand that taken to its logical extreme, that it goes too far and there need to be policy limits on violence and threats of violence.
Federal judges don't create policy limits on federal statutes. If there's a right in a federal statute to do anything you want in a mediation without consequence, then there's such a right. If instead there's no such right, it's presumably because as a general matter of federal law, there's no right to do anything you want in a mediation. But you can't say, that, unless there's some language in the statute that you're relying on.
There is.
You can't, in response to a question about what is the meaning of this statute, tell the court, oh, just make up what you think to be a good rule.
Well, because taken to its logical extreme, that position leads to the kind of result that you're talking about.
Yes, and perhaps that means there's something wrong with the position to begin with.
Well, and that is why we stated we are willing to entertain, if the court were to say, the participation clause is very broad, it contemplates any participation under Title VII, but even the participation clause does not go far enough that you can commit acts of violence in an EEOC mediation. It's not a perfect argument, but we believe that exception would be appropriate.
What if it weren't violence? What if it were defamation?
We believe that you go back to Hatmaker and look at whether the subject of the communication.
That's not an answer to my question. Suppose he comes in and he says, you know, stick your, you know, what he said. But then he says, and by the way, I'm well aware of the fact that you, singling out one of the AB data people, you're a pedophile. And supposes it's false. Can he be fired for that?
Under our position, no. As the participation clause reads.
That's pretty remarkable. So, in your view, mediation is a is a place in which you can defame people without legal liability?
Well, the Supreme Court has instructed us in U.S. versus Gonzalez that is pretty much what the participation clause says.
What,
any participation.
Is a defamation privilege in mediation? Supreme Court has said that? That's remarkable. Where did they say that?
In explaining the overarching
breadth. Did they mention defamation?
I don't believe they did.
No, I don't think so.
But the language is very clear that the any language in the participation
clause. But you yourself put limits on the any.
And I think a reasonable limit would be appropriate, but limited only to violence.
Can't defamation be quite serious?
Certainly.
Then why should it be privileged in mediation?
Well, because...
What's the magic of mediation that you can...
Well, for one thing...
Amok? I don't understand that.
Well, for one thing, the parties also signed a confidentiality agreement.
But anyway, the first question I had was, how do you preserve the separation method of mediation? If you're privileged to barge into the other person's meeting room, then separation goes by the board. Isn't that true?
Well, I would say no, Your Honor, because in most cases that go to mediation, the parties do get very heated and can be emotional.
In most cases, I'm talking about situations in which someone becoming annoyed during the mediation barges into the other person's meeting room and is rude. If this is permitted conduct, that undermines the separation method. That's why I'm surprised you don't recognize any kind of permissible sanction to protect this form of mediation.
Well, I believe that should be up to the mediator.
But the mediator can't impose sanctions, can he?
Well, he can admonish the parties. He can.
Oh, great! Admonish. Yeah. But he has no punitive.
He can
power.
Lift an eyebrow.
Yes. I mean, my point only is that Mr. Bennis's comments amounted to
not interested
rejecting
in the
offer.
Comments. Don't you understand? I'm interested in the barging in.
I don't think that rises to the level of something that should take his conduct out of the participation clause of Title VII.
Thank you, Ms. Hines.
Thank you.
Mr. Padway.
May it please the Court, Ms. Hines. What I think the court is looking at is what we look at it with respect to procedures that are involved in mediation and what results in a successful mediation. And if you look at, and I'll pick up on the purpose of the mediation in the guidelines that were set forth in the petitioner's separate appendix at page 123, where it talks about why do parties go into an EEOC mediation? And at items 12 and 13 and 14, it talks about this as a process where the parties have a broken down employment relationship, and that through the mediation, the parties can identify ways to repair the relationship. And what we found in this particular situation was a case where, from our perspective, my client engaged in a good faith attempt to resolve what was a dispute, and Mr. Bennis essentially lived up to the perception that my clients had of him with respect to his employment performance when he uninvitedly entered into their room, told them what they could do with their settlement proposal, told them that they could fire him, and that he would see them in court. He was essentially violating every norm and every practice that gets involved in a mediation. The whole point of a mediation process is to try to reach some kind of a settlement. And so if you're not using the process to reach a settlement, but you're actually going 180 degrees away from that, you are violating in many respects the protocol. And what Ms. Hines is arguing with saying that anything goes essentially under the participation clause misses the point of Mr. Bennis's conduct, because the real test under the, if you will, the anything goes under participation clause is, would it prevent others from pursuing the rights that are vested essentially under the Title VII provisions? So if we look at what Mr. Bennis did in that context, did what he do, was that in any respect consistent with, or the sanctions that my client took against him, would that in any form or fashion prevent any other employee from participating in an EEOC mediation process? And I submit to this court that in no respect, out of any concept, would anyone feel that an employer taking the immediate action that they did would preclude somebody else from deciding that they want to participate in an EEOC mediation. His conduct was completely uncalled for, completely beyond the guidelines, and it was completely unnecessary. At some point in the plaintiff's brief, he argues that he was essentially terminating the mediation session, and he's permitted to terminate the mediation session. Yes, he is permitted to terminate the session. He's not permitted to terminate it in the fashion in which he did. That was completely uncalled for behavior. It was insubordinate, it was abusive, and it certainly would give cause to any employer to terminate an employee for that kind of conduct on the spot. And another point that I would just bring out is that if you look at the conduct of Mr. Bennis in the context of the fact that he ultimately, at summary judgment, withdrew the underlying sex discrimination claim and acknowledged that he could not establish the sex discrimination claim, the basis for which the mediation session was ongoing, we would take the furtherance that the perceptions that my clients had with respect to Mr. Bennis were completely affirmed by his behavior as he exited the mediation. I would also point out, as we submitted in our supplemental authority, that under the recent Texas versus Nacer case, we're in a situation where the Seventh Circuit's but-for causation theory.
I was puzzled by that letter. I didn't see the plaintiff to be making a mixed motive claim. Did you understand this as a mixed motive case?
I did not, and the district court raised it in its decision, but you are correct. It is not a mixed motive case. I have nothing further unless the court has any further questions.
Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.